Hey, you've got the morning show with Aaron, and in our studio I've got Dennis Amor, Community Board Chairperson. Morning, Dennis.
Morning, Aaron.
So how's it been for you the last sort of month just settling into the role?
Oh, it's actually been quite quiet, to be honest.
Yeah.
We had a planning meeting just to sort of work out who's going to be involved in what going forward, and having a look at what sort of things we want to try and promote and push forward with council and things, that sort of thing. But other than that, no, it's been quite quiet in the lead up to Christmas. Obviously, everyone's pretty busy.
Yeah, for sure. So let's just talk about a few things. I don't know if I talked about it with you or whether it was with Lisa about the funding coming through to do the rest of the work at the wharf. So that's for the, what is it called? The
SP3, so it's the Western Walkway.
Western Walkway. I was surprised about how much that's costing.
Yeah, well, it's...
I'm not, that's not a loaded statement. I just was surprised.
Yeah, okay. It's around the $3 million
yeah.
that we're looking at. The work is fairly extensive once you understand what's involved. And a big chunk is, we're developing the whole walkway along there. But one of the big challenges has been the... removing some contaminated soil in the ground there. Also, there's a lot of very soft area as you get towards the Dolphin.
Yeah.
So they're not going to be able to build from the ground up. They're going to have to probably put pre-stress beams in there. I don't think the final design's been confirmed there.
Okay.
Pre-stress beams going across there and things like that. So there's some additional costs that we weren't, when we were looking at, just sort of putting a walkway along there. There's additional costs over and above from a structural point of view
right.
that we've run into.
Yeah, so that makes sense, because I was looking at if that's costing $3 million, why did anyone think it could fit into the $2.5 million project with all the other stuff as well?
Yeah.
But that explains that. For the sake of the people who are going, why can't that money be spent on other things, and they're naming their particular things, can you explain what the source of the funding is for that particular item?
Well, the initial money came out of, now you're making me think back.
The Provincial Growth Fund originally.
Provincial Growth Fund, and we were asked, or council were asked, what projects they had they would like to spend some money on associated with the wharf and that area around there. So they came up with a plan to sort of look at the Western Walkway. There was some outstanding work to do, the strengthening on the wharf itself, and then the idea of an additional pontoon and an improvement of the eastern side of the wharf.
Yeah.
So the whole application was made based around that criteria. And I guess at the end of the day, you have to justify that that's what you're spending the money on. So, yeah, unfortunately, that's what it's got to be spent on. And similarly for the additional funding through the Better Ways funding, it was because that project was partway through, it was keen to see it. And the costs had blown out once we got into the design work and the engineering side of things. It was then looked at, we needed additional money. So when the Better Ways funding came up with the government, then we decided, well, we need to finish this project and get it complete, otherwise it could run on for ages.
So that government, a source of funding has been the government again.
Yes.
They wanted, one of the things, I think they wanted something, is that the shovel ready thing, that they wanted something that was already on the council's books, already planned or potentially planned, so I could just go ahead right away. Is that part of that deal?
Yeah, that was part of the deal.
Yeah.
And that they wanted the money to be spent. I guess it's their idea of trying to promote the economy or boost the economy by getting projects that are partway designed, initiated and underway sort of immediately or within sort of 6 or 12 months.
Yeah. And was this is the funding that was, it's been described variously as like a bribe from the government for Three Waters? Was that?
Well, that's certainly been.
I'm not trying to put words in your mouth. I believe the CEO of the council actually used that word. So.
Yeah, no, it's definitely been bandied about that.
Yeah.
And it was dependent on Three Waters. There was two blocks of money coming through. One, initially, which I guess you could argue was a bribe.
Yeah.
And then if Three Waters go ahead, there's additional money coming for available as well.
Spent on?
Well, there's no criteria around it. I'm not sure what the criteria around it is myself
okay.
at the moment. I'm sure there is some criteria. But it's certainly something that as council and as community board we need to look at now that they've passed Three Waters. In the last 48 hours.
Oh, have they? I haven't quite up with that.
Yeah,
I mean, they've passed it, but still, if there's a change of government, it can still be stopped, can't it?
Well, the government can obviously rescind that act.
Yes, so in reality, it's still up in the air, isn't it?
Yeah, but I guess the question is, we've got another 12 months if the present government is going to give away another $50 or $80 million or whatever the number was, then let's make sure Waikato District Council get a bit of it.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, that's right. You can't do anything about what's happening at the government level, but happy to accept their bribes.
Why not?
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, I said that in a slightly silly way, but yeah, if there's money on offer and it can benefit the community... Yeah, you don't turn that down. Yeah. What else is happening at the wharf? Because I know there's work happening down there as well, right?
Yeah,
now.
The structural work's been ongoing.
So this is for the pillars under the wharf.
Yeah, all the structure under the wharf, the walk on the dolphins, and you would have seen a couple of photos in the recent agenda.
Yeah.
For the community board meeting on next Wednesday, and that work has become a bit more extensive than originally planned. But it still fits. It doesn't. It's blown outside the budget, but the contingency we had for the project will cover it. So there's no additional costs there.
Yep.
And that work, I'm led to believe, will all be finished before Christmas. And
we should say when you talk about blowouts and contingency, that you expect to use your contingency, especially working on an already pre-existing structure, I would say, in my experience, and especially one that's underwater.
Yeah, no, it was expected that there'd be things that we'd find that weren't obviously visible once you start removing some of the concrete that's been cracked and things like that, and find that rebar's disappeared inside that. It's got to be replaced. So.
Completely evaporated.
Yes. So I did get a tour around there with the guys from MBIE and with some council executives the other day.
Right.
So the work under there is extremely, very extensive.
Yeah, because I was just looking at the picture earlier, there's one of the pillars is basically, well, the picture I saw, it wasn't doing much at the time, it wasn't going to support, because they completely hacked it all around it, exposed the rebar inside, and I guess we're rebuilding it out from there. So
yeah, they basically replaced the rebar that's got to be replaced, and then they just put a cap around it and refill it with concrete.
You do wonder if it would have been easier to knock everything down and start again, but...
Well, I guess that we're probably spending, I'm not sure the exact dollars, just a little bit in excess of $1 million.
Yeah.
Would have been a bit more expensive to replace the whole wharf on that basis.
This is true, actually, yeah, for sure. And I think we need to understand, too, that wharves are just... That's such an extreme environment, weather-wise and with the salt there, that they are expensive things to maintain, I think.
Yeah, and I think the other thing is, part of our wharf is getting on towards that 100-year mark as well, so it's part of it's been there for a long time.
Yeah.
1923 or thereabouts, someone will correct me.
Yeah, we'll get a call from John later. okay, so, yeah, all right, so things are happening at the wharf.
Just on the wharf, I guess SP2, which is the pontoon and the eastern walkway side of things, there's some off-site fabrication going on that now. The consent's been approved for that, so that'll go ahead. And the target is to have that finished by the end of May. I'm talking to them in the last few days.
Yeah.
And then SP3, which is the western walkway, we've still got to get a consent for that, but that will follow SP2.
Yes, these are internal SP3, SP2.
Oh, they're just called separate proportion 1, 2 and 3. So the project got broken up into three portions, basically.
Right. Yeah.
And it's being done on a stage-by-stage basis for consenting and construction works and that sort of thing.
Okay, all right. But the wharf is still usable
for
the public?
Yeah, well, there's a whole lot of tuna boats parked down there the other day. So I've raced with council how we get recover our berthing fees on those guys. So I've passed that on to council that we need to be ensuring that we recover our costs or the charges that we're entitled to claim off those guys. So hopefully they're following that through.
Speaking of fees, I know there's talk about boat ramp fees. I don't quite know where that's at. I know that various people have different opinions about this.
Yeah, it's... my understanding, it's coming up. It'll come up this year, and I have had some initial discussions with some of the boating club guys and things like that. I don't think everyone's against it. I think the big thing is they want to be able to see that the money they pay goes back to those assets.
Yeah.
So that's what we need to make sure it's ring fenced. It goes back to maintaining those assets or developing those assets going forward. So, I would imagine if you look around the country, I think at Taupo you pay about $80 a year if you buy a yearly subscription, or you pay $10 or $8, $8 every time you use the ramp if you're an outsider. So it's not an extreme amount of money.
I've wondered for a while whether the fact that we don't have any fees, and I don't know, maybe most ramps around the North Island do have fees, maybe that's increased the amount of traffic we've had over here, or is it just because the fishing's so much better than it used to be?
No, I don't think the fees make any difference, to be honest.
How much would we have to charge to make a difference to the parking and around the wharf?
I doubt if we'll ever get to that point.
Yeah.
Because, you know, at the end of the day, if it's windy on the east coast and it's calm on the west coast, the guys will shoot this way.
Yeah, right.
You know, because we're such a narrow island. If you're living in Matamara and Morrinsville, you want to go fishing, you've got the option of going either way. If you're up at Huntly, you can go to Kaiawa or you can come to Ragland.
Yeah.
So it's really more weather dependent.
Yeah, yeah. Is there a possibility that there's a different level of fee if you're a ratepayer versus a visitor? Like,
oh yeah, I think there will be a different.
Yeah.
Well, when I say a visitor, I guess there'll be an annual fee, and I'm only guessing here based on what I see around the country.
Yeah.
Be an annual fee that you can take out. Someone like myself who goes fishing quite a few times in the year would take an annual fee.
Yeah.
And there'll probably be a daily fee as well. And things like that. Although the daily fee becomes difficult to administer, but it's still used in other parts of the country.
I guess we've actually got some shops by the wharf. Council could potentially ask a shop to accept fees or something
like that. Yeah, you could do. Yeah. You could buy a license from them if you're stuck, or we can put in a parking meter for boats using the ramps and things like that.
I guess it's
and then you could just police it.
Could you police it? Is it worth policing it? Has it become an honesty situation?
I guess it does, but if you've got a parking meter man wandering around town, he can go and wander around the boat ramps at the same time occasionally.
True, and we do have a parking warden back again.
Do we? Okay, good.
Yeah, be warned. Yeah, just a couple of weeks ago, I think.
Okay, no, so, I wasn't aware of that.
Yeah, yeah. I know, I think that's a hard job to get staff for.
I would think so.
It's not a job I would want. I don't know about you, but...
No, I don't think you get too much public positive feedback when you're writing out a ticket for someone.
No. We should do that one time. We'll see someone writing out a ticket, say, oh, good job, well done, and see if they get a heart attack of shock. Yeah. All right. Moving on. Civil defence. Is someone coming to talk about civil defence at the community board meeting? Is that the hope?
Don't think that was on the agenda.
Oh, okay. Defence is listed there. Something's happening.
It's on the Works and Actions Committee, and Lisa's sort of been leading that with Gabriel in the past. So it's been there for 3 years, basically, that I was there in the last term. So, yeah, it's something we need to get finalised and get settled in so that we know how it's all going to work and things like that.
It's actually been up in the air a lot longer than that. I remember when Linda Cole was on chairperson on the community board, that they were getting staff out to talk about that, and things didn't seem to be happening then. So,
yeah, okay. Well, it's something we certainly need to try and close out if it's been hanging around that long.
Yeah, and what is it? Is it just to have a community plan?
I think. Well, I actually don't know, Aaron, to be honest with you, but yeah. I would think that's the intent. Is how do we respond if there is an emergency?
Yeah.
What areas are basically places people can go to if their house has been impacted or something like that? Is it the school? Is it a certain hall or whatever?
Yeah.
You know, and how does it work in Tiuki, Tamata, Ragland, and things like that? Because we need to think of those outlying areas as well. And then who's going to be the coordinator for each of those areas, and how do they respond?
Yeah.
Or we do that through the police, the fire, or something else.
Yeah, yeah. Like, I know we are set up to broadcast during a civil defence emergency.
Okay.
And like, that's one of the things we tell our funders, that part of our role is to be available for that. And I think the experience during when we had the COVID outbreak here last October, when, you know, it was all on us as in the community, like, because I've been trying to explain to funders what we did during that time, and one of the things I say is that the information coming from the national level media was no good. They weren't saying when and where you could get tests and jabs and things like that at the level that was useful for us. And people wanted to know, you know, what are the community leaders doing about this? They wanted some reassurance that things were happening. You don't get that information from the national media, because it's just too fine a grain for them. And in fact, the TV people just turned up here shoving microphones under people's noses saying, do you guys know that you're behind the national average and the vaccination rate? Which later turned out that every rural community was.
Yeah.
You know, it was quite normal. But they were less than helpful, the TV people.
Right, yeah.
So, and I feel like in a civil defense emergency, we might be far more reliant on ourselves than maybe we want to be, but it might just be the reality.
Yeah, I guess depending on the extent of the emergency and things like that.
Yeah,
everyone goes into a panic about the more populous areas of the country.
Yes.
And things like that. And yeah, we need to be able to respond either via council or whatever way we decide to do it.
Or the politicians might be stuck in Wellington, unable to fly out or drive out.
Probably a good thing.
Earthquake, yeah, but they'll be like, get us out of here. So yeah, that'll be the focus, right? Yeah. So anyway, all right, civil defence. The Wee Nearer walkway, which is, if people don't know exactly what that is, that's from the jetty along toward the bridge across to the other side of the inlet there, across to Papahua.
And through to where the Lions or the old Coast Guard building
yeah,
was.
Sorry, all the way around there. Yeah, so there's been proposals to upgrade that. Do we have any news on that?
No, I haven't got any news on that. It's still in the design phase as far as I'm aware.
Okay.
And I haven't chased it. It's on the... it's in the agenda as one of the items to be getting a bit of an update on.
Okay, so there'll be staff at the... Theoretically, there'll be staff at the community board meeting to tell you guys about that.
No, we're struggling. At the moment, I'm coming up with a list of things I want some feedback on, and hopefully Alison will be able to sort that out before the meeting and give us an update on those things.
Okay.
The only one we've got at this stage coming to the meeting will be Samantha Baker to give us an update on Sound Splash and that.
Okay. So you were saying to me off the air that the paperwork's still not been finalised for that, so I guess that's what she'll be telling you when the date's going to be. Is that what you're hoping?
Well, I'm hoping so. My understanding is that council had a meeting in the last week or so, with Naomi and Brian, and just to get all the paperwork finalised. Exactly what's outstanding, I'm not sure. But at this stage, they haven't got a land use consent. And things like that. So council's pushing them to get all that stuff through and finalised, because obviously we've got about 11 working days left till Christmas.
11?
Something like that.
Yeah, I'm looking at the calendar. Yeah, okay. Yeah, fair enough.
And then,
it's just frightening when you say a small number like that.
And obviously once councils go on holiday, it's probably going to be pretty hard to get them to do much through Christmas, New Year, and Sound Splash is, what, middle of January?
I actually know one council staff member who was back on the 4th of January.
Okay.
So, yeah.
So anyway, hopefully that'll all go through and
That's just one, Dennis.
Yeah, and they'll get their land use consent before Christmas, and then they'll all be go.
Okay. Manu Bay, I know a while ago, so the Manu Bay breakwater, I should give some background, that there was a big hui with all involved parties, and there was an agreement that someone would go and design something, I think. And
yeah.
A while ago, in a public meeting, you were saying that they needed a hurry up to provide the info that they hadn't provided on the date they said they were going to. Do we have any updates on that?
I did talk to Council MIP staff member who's involved with this, and he's assured me that they are on target to come back with their presentation on mid-January. So basically there's two consultants working together to have a look at options, and then they're going to present those options back to the interested parties come middle of January. I think the date was the 16th, but that's probably going to be too hard to get everyone together at that stage. So I imagine it'll slip a couple of weeks. It might be early February before we can get everyone together. But hopefully they'll have that information after the holiday period.
So are we talking about scrapping the whole thing that's there and starting again, or are we talking about adding something on?
No idea. No.
I know that's cheaper to add something on, but...
Yeah, so no, I haven't gone into that detail. It was left very open with the consultants to come up with some options that would alleviate some of the concerns of the boating club, but also take into consideration that the concerns of the surfing community as well.
Yeah. I know there's always a bit of tension there. The discretionary funds, now the last meeting, this is something that's happened a couple of times recently, is the people have applied for the fund but not come to the meeting to explain to the community board what it's about, and that seems to make it quite difficult for you guys to make a decision. Do you have a preference? Because now people come to you, don't they, now? Is that what's going to happen?
No, they'll put their application in. They're welcome to ring me before they put their application in.
Sorry, that's what I meant. Yeah, beforehand, yeah.
They can ring me or any community board member for that matter to talk through their application, how to make their application and what information is required.
Yeah.
And it's probably worth them doing that so that when the application comes in, We've got an appreciation of what it is, and we've also can make sure that we've got all the information that we need to make a decision on.
Yeah.
I guess the last time round with the one that got deferred to this round is no one actually knew who the organisation was. So it's a bit hard to sort of give them a few thousand dollars when you don't know who they are. So they are now, you know, so we definitely encourage people to come and make their presentation and to the community board if they want that money and if they want to make sure it goes through.
Yeah. Can they do it on Zoom? Preferably
not.
But I know there's some people who just, like, they're working in Hamilton and they might not really have an option.
Yeah, well, I guess that's the thing that they need to work through with the community board beforehand. And if they work with someone and someone from the community board has got all the information, it's potentially they could do the presentation on their behalf.
Yeah.
And that sort of thing. But they'd have to work through all that before the meeting.
Yeah, and I imagine what happened last time, you weren't the chairperson until 10 minutes into the meeting or something, so there was no one, technically no one to...
For them to talk to, no.
Yeah, no. Yeah. So that was... So I just want to... And the main reason... Another thing I want to mention about the discretionary fund is that I noticed, because I think there's been a build-up of funds in it because of COVID and things not happening. There hasn't been as many applications over the last year or so there's actually a reasonable amount of money there at the moment. So people should take note.
Yeah, there's an opportunity if someone's got a small project that they want to get off the ground and they want a couple of thousand dollars for or something like that, then it is purely a discretionary fund. It's at the discretion of the community board whether they give the money or they don't. But it is there for the smaller, probably for the smaller organisations, charitable organisations. So they have to be a charitable organisation or a trust.
Yeah.
It can't be a private individual and that sort of thing. So, you know, most clubs within Raglan will fall into that criteria.
I imagine there's some sports clubs that are not registered as a charitable organisation, because I had to do that for the soccer, and it's a bit of an arduous journey
to get there
with the paperwork. So would they be... Okay, like if it.
I'd just have to read the
conditions.
The rules and conditions around the discretionary fund, but yeah.
That's not because it's not set by you, it's set by council.
Some
time ago, I guess. Yeah, okay. All right, so that's a discretionary fund. The Freedom. There is a chance for people to make comment on the Freedom Camping bylaw review that's coming up. I don't have much info about that, but do you have any thoughts or messages about that?
No, I guess because little has happened on this in the last 12 months, we're going to be sort of stuck with what we had prior.
This summer?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the pressure went off it, I guess, due to the COVID period, because we didn't have a lot of Freedom Campers, but certainly noticed in recent times that there's more and more people camping around the place again in the last few months.
Yeah.
So it's picking up again. There is someone coming to talk to it. I see it was on the agenda, so I need to follow up with council and just find out who's coming and what they're talking about to give us an update. The parking one, we put out a parking plan a couple of years ago, so we're going to reinitiate that, basically get that up and going and make copies of that available around the community for people.
Is that a Freedom Camping parking plan?
No, it's more around parking in Raglan.
So if you're a visitor, like where you can go.
Yep.
Yeah, so let people know they can go around James Street or maybe park over on the fields across Papahua.
Yeah, things like that.
Yeah, okay, all right. So as far as I know, for the Freedom Camping Review, it's like at an early stage, and then they're going to draft something, then they'll come back for comment. But the early stage is the time to get in, really, isn't it?
Yeah, the council came out, I don't know whether they put it on regular notice board, but I've seen it publicly out for people, to if they've got an interest, to make some comments on it now.
Yeah.
And then they'll draft a bylaw, and then we can comment on do submissions on the bylaw.
But it is subject to national level legislation, isn't it? What they can and can't do. I believe there's something about that.
I'm not sure how that impacts. I know different councils in different areas have got different rules.
Yeah, my daughter just found out over in Thames Coromandel District Council, they're very tough. Go and sleep in your station wagon, you get a $200 fine.
Yeah, I was.
She probably doesn't want me saying that on the radio, but never mind.
I was involved in some of the Freedom Camping areas down through maintenance contract I worked on down in South Island and that sort of thing, and it was a real nightmare around there, that particularly around public toilets and things like that. where in remote areas they all had their own storage facilities and things like that, and you got the Freedom campers using it, but you also got the fully contained guys using them as dump stations as well and things like that. The problem seems to just grow. The more Freedom camping areas, the more facilities put in, they tend to get abused, even in areas where they'd been very well set up.
Yeah, I've heard that, like Christchurch Council down there, they tried to say, okay, we'll welcome people to this area here, it'll be a Freedom camping area, but it still kind of blew up in their face. I think there's just so many people coming. And I think New Zealand is known, especially for young people from Europe, like you come to New Zealand, it's free, you can do what you want and just drive around and not be responsible for anything. For some of them.
Yeah, no, that's right. I've even seen them camped out in the end, when we were living out in the country down the end of the one-way roads and things like that. They'll camp down the end there for the night and then move on in the morning, and you're left with the rubbish that they leave behind.
Yeah, yeah. So anyway, so if that's got people all keyed up now about Freedom Camping, go to the council website and see what's happening there about the review, because it's time to get in. Anything else happening that I haven't got on here that you've been up to over the last few weeks?
No, I guess the Lions have confirmed that New Year's parade's going to go on.
Yes.
It's going to happen, so that's good news.
I haven't seen any more details other than that it's happening.
So. No. I was talking to Bernice and she said, yeah, it's definitely going to go ahead and that sort of thing. Greenslade Road, the playground that they're looking at out there is in the design stage. I've had a chat to the guy involved in that. So as soon as that, they've got a bit more information on what they're thinking about there, they're going to come back out to the public and we'll be able to talk to people in that community, just make sure they've see what other ideas they've got and make sure they're comfortable with what's being planned.
Yeah.
But that's probably the main things at the moment. I guess the big ones are the wharf and Sound Splash, and we'll get those out of the road and then move on.
Yeah. Well, it's coming into a funny time of year. But the community board meeting is next Wednesday.
1:30 at the town hall. And, if people want to come along and have a say, we've still got the initial half hour for public to have input.
Yep.
And that sort of thing, and hear any problems or challenges they've got, or any positive comments as well.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That'd be nice. There was the people down Lorenzen Bay, and they were wanting to keep their walkway, which some council staff had thought should be removed.
I haven't caught up with one of our community board members was having a look at that. I haven't caught up with her to see where they've got to with that. That's something I'd probably need. You reminded me that I probably need to make sure we've got in hand before the meeting.
Well, if it's if they're not happy about what's happening, I'm sure they'll be at the meeting to let you guys know. So. Hey folks, we've been talking to Dennis Abel, who is our community board chairperson, going to be chairing a second meeting on Wednesday, Town Hall Supper Room. And thanks for coming in, Dennis.